From the basement studios of the Atlantic Voice, this is the Atlantic Voice Podcast, 3,000 miles of opinion. This is the Atlantic Voice Podcast. I'm Zeph.
And I'm Eric.
We're down in the basement studio, and as always, we start the show with a news roundup. We have a new guest.
That's right.
A new guest is on the podcast. Tell us about this new guest.
Well, the microphone. We talked about it originally, about how I got this new microphone for the podcast for a Christmas gift to me. And the original one did not quite work. It was like the levels were really low and you couldn't hear anything. And we talked to the I actually was having all these emails with a microphone company, and they said it was calibrated for music and things like that. So it was, I mean, a whole runaround. But at the end of the day, a new one arrived today by FedEx. Actually, yesterday by FedEx. And now we are talking to you through it.
I'm going to describe the new microphone. And we have talked in the past about our surroundings here in the basement studio. But I'm looking at this thing. And this looks very professional.
It looks very serious, doesn't it?
This looks like all those pictures of, you know, the Beatles in black and white in the recording studio, or, you know, Edward R. Murrow or other broadcasting greats. This thing is about a foot tall. It looks like sort of an R2-D2 to reference a Star Wars, a favorite movie of mine, but it looks like the real deal.
Right. It's got the metal mesh cover on it and all that sort of stuff. And I think it has a bunch of attachments where you can attach it to like a big boom, you know, like the people who
reach out
and pull it towards you and stuff like that. So you just turn it upside down, it would work that way and all that sort of stuff. So hopefully it sounds at least as good as the other one, if not better.
For those of you back in the UK, I want you to envision two men talking into a BBC World Service microphone. That's what this looks like right now, which leads me to think maybe we need to put a little plate on the microphone with the name of the show.
Yeah, there is a little room. It's almost like a little trophy stand on the bottom or something like that. I mean, I you know, frankly, as we were doing this microphone, I started looking around at all kinds of stuff because people, we've probably talked about this before, but we sit here, we're talking at a table, both into the same microphone, but you do see some people who run a podcast where each person has a microphone, the headphones, they're using a mixing board, a whole bunch more technology, which is interesting, although we're told it sounds pretty good, so I'm not sure we need it, but it's a notion that we might go there, so if we keep this stuff up, maybe we need another one of these microphones, and then we could have a whole kind of studio setup or something like that.
That'd be great, yes. And then we'd have so much equipment, we wouldn't actually be able to see each other.
That's right.
Computers, well, big, you know, like, one-foot-high microphones, the real blankets on the wall.
Those real radio shows, they do it where, like, they're in separate rooms, basically. I do wonder, like, what that would do to the dynamic of having a discussion, because I do feel like we're just sitting here at the table having a discussion. There happens to be a microphone. But if I had headphones on and we had a microphone, like, right in your face with a little filter on it and all that sort of stuff, it might not feel the same. Like, I don't know, have to try it out.
We have a very sort of earthy quality to the broadcast. We don't want to lose that.
I mean, one of the ideas we were just talking before, one of our ideas for a offshoot, I guess, would be to do a movie commentary. You know, like sort of, it's not Mystery Science 3000 type.
Well, why don't you explain to people how this story first came out? Because I think, well, I'm going to lie, this is not our idea. But we both read a news story about a movie director who'd done
that's right.
I mean, that's how this came about. I think the film was Looper, which was a sci-fi film that came out, I think, back in October with Jonathan Gordon-Levitt, whatever. We always get his name wrong, and Bruce Willis. And I've not seen the film. I keep meaning to.
It's very good.
Very good, yeah. Apparently, you sent me a news link.
Yeah, he was the, I think, the director or writer, I forget now, but had done a recording of a podcast, basically, that you could then listen to during the movie, and you get, you know, so you would still go to the theaters, but it would be like a director's commentary,
like on a DVD.
And so the joke was saying, you know, there are a bunch of movie theaters, these people were coming in and they'd get into the movie theater and they'd put an iPod in there, have their earphones in to be listening to the commentary. And so I thought, well, one, that's kind of interesting. I mean, you want to, you know, if you're really into the movie and you want to see different things, and it is kind of a complicated movie, so I could see where this would be helpful. But two, I thought, well, what if we did that? Like, we did a little commentary, and it's obviously not the kind of thing that everybody's going to rush out and see the movie immediately and listen to our commentary. It's not like in a normal podcast where it's coming out every couple of weeks or something like that. But we could put it up online, and whenever somebody got around to listening to whatever movie or watching whatever movie we described, they could listen to this stuff and our witty banter over the top of the movie kind of thing. And so
we're going to select a movie.
Yeah, we're thinking about that. We're trying to think of a movie. If anybody has any suggestions, I mean, the first thing I thought of was something.
Something's on TV a lot.
Yeah, someone's on TV, and then it, like, you know, it's not such a big deal of a movie that you would be annoyed by us talking.
No, of course not.
Right? And so maybe like a classic James Bond movie and like, you know, shows up on TBS.
I can't think of anyone annoyed by the podcast.
Yeah, well, if you're annoyed, probably you're not listening to it. But the idea would be to have that going along. And we haven't – it requires some technology effort on our side because – we'd have to record it watching the movie, but without you able to hear the movie through the microphone. So that's one place where we might need to have headphones on so that we could hear the movie and be commenting on it and stuff like that. But in any event, if there's a movie that you think is particularly suited to this, you know, maybe it's sort of funny or it'd be sort of interesting, drop us a note at atlanticvoice@gmail.com.
And, we will put on the blog. We will start putting a short list of movies up there maybe for if we hear from people. And
yeah, do you know how to do like a little voting thing on the blog?
I can go ahead and work on that.
You can figure that stuff and then people could kind
of... I'm actually going to nominate the movie now based on a conversation I had with someone else the other week, a friend of the Atlantic Voice. I'm going to nominate the classic 80s comedy Airplane.
Oh, that was just on TV. I was there just watching go. This so yesterday.
That's what we're looking for. We're looking for a classic film that everyone knows. And then Eric and I are going to do our own alternative DVD commentary so that next time you watch that film, you can watch it with our presence.
Yeah, and apart from that director, obviously, Mystery Science 3000 was one of the big ones that used to do that on TV where you'd see it. But that was robots, though.
And we did robots last week or last episode. I think people know my position on robots. So I think I'm not intimidated at all by Mystery Science Theater 3000.
No, but I just was saying we would not really do the same thing. That was sort of more goofy and camp type of thing. Ours would be more of our, like, it might be partly actual insights about the movie, partly our own experiences with it. You know, I saw this at this time, or, you know, whatever jokes we come up with as we're watching through the movie.
Because for those of you that don't know any better, those of you that are new to the Atlantic Voice podcast, large chunks of this podcast are actually based in fact.
You wouldn't know it.
Well,
I'm going to take us out of order here because I know we had planned an order of things, but I'm realizing we're talking about the movies. We might as well talk about one of the other, hearkening back to our first podcast that we ever put out there when we talked about summertime movies.
Yes, and I think you can still find that on the blog and on your RSS feed. Our very first, our pilot episode, and it is I listened to it the other day, actually, just for giggles.
Yeah.
And it is... we're much better now than we were back then.
Well, and also, we definitely didn't have a nice... Well, we had a microphone, but we recorded it in a room that sounded like we were in the bottom of a well. But, you know, if you can bear with that for a couple of minutes, we were talking about summer blockbuster movies, and one of the movies we talked about was Prometheus, which time... I mean, you were kind of skeptical about to begin with.
Yes.
And I would have to say that the general public reviews have been fairly... It's not, time has not been kind to it. People are sort of looking at it more askance, but... One of my gifts for a birthday recently was the 4-DVD set of Prometheus, including 3D version, including the HD, the Blu-ray version, including multiple commentaries, including there's a thing that you can put on your tablet so that while you're watching it, it synchronizes with your tablet and gives you additional information. It's like commentary that would be on your tablet while you're watching this sort of stuff. But I've heard actually very good things about this thing and that there's an added scenes and some things that make it a more interesting movie. So I still hold out hopes that this will be maybe I'll convince you to listen to it. I don't think that'll be the movie we do the commentary on because I don't think we'll get enough people to listen in.
No. And I said this, though, when I saw that you had it out there on the table in the basement studio foyer or lobby that have here.
The green room.
I picked it up and I'm like, ooh, how many discs are in here?
Yep.
And like I say, you said you had the 3D, but you don't have a 3D TV.
No, not yet, but we'll get one eventually. All right. So, you know,
but I thought it was very hefty, and the first thing I said to you was, have you watched it yet, and have you listened to the commentaries? Because I do want some of that stuff explained to me.
Yeah, that's what I'll do. I will interpret it for you. I'll do a commentary, just for you, I'll do a commentary.
Well, I'm going to say this, though. If any of the makers of Prometheus are out there, if you're actually listening to this podcast, I'm going to warn you right now. We're going to listen to the commentaries, because if we don't, our alternative commentary is going to explain your movie for you. And you might not like how your movie gets explained if it's left to us. Yes, so we're going to threaten you. If you're thinking of doing Prometheus 2, do yourselves a favor, listen to what we have to say.
Yeah.
Is that it on Prometheus?
I think that's it. Yeah, there's not much more than that. So.
Well, talking of old stories, we have another space story.
That's right, Prometheus being a space-related thing. And, you know, part of the plot of Prometheus was... these aliens were ultimately out to get us. They'd created us, but they were out to get us kind of thing. They were going to wipe us out. Well, you know, space is against us. We've talked about the meteor in Russia just on Friday night. This is Sunday now. And Friday night, there was a meteor sighting in the Washington, D.C. area. And apparently all the way from Florida up to Maine, folks saw this thing, which was like shooting across the sky as bright as basically a full moon. If you were noticing it at 8 p.m. on a Friday, it was a convenient people be up. It wasn't in the middle of the night. Just more evidence of space being out to get us.
Well, I want to say this now, because I remember when I brought this up a couple of episodes ago, I could sense from my partner that he was poo-pooing my position a little bit on the meteor attack. I said back then that these things travel in packs. They come in waves. And again, you would have heard this before, long-time listeners. Anyone who's seen any of those meteor attacking Earth movies knows it's not just one big one. There's a whole load of others showing up, blasting bits of the world, but not taking out any of the main stars. This proves my point.
Well, not actually.
It attacked nobody in Russia. Let's face it. A little plot of land in Russia got blown up. There were those guys standing by the hole in the ice. That's one of the warning meteors. Now we've had them coming to the east coast of America, one of the most populous regions in the world. I'm telling you, the big one, it's on its way.
Yeah, I don't know if that's actually
part
true.
Of this gang of asteroids roaming the galaxy looking to start trouble.
I think this is a case of like when you buy a car and you weren't familiar with that car before, but you buy whatever car it is, and you suddenly realize everybody's got that car. You go out there and like this car's all over the place. You're just now sensitized to it. And this is what they actually said. These things are going on. As the newspaper articles were saying, the meteor that this one was, they estimate based on what was going on that it was about the size of a washing machine. And remind me to come back to this question of being
okay,
the size of
I'm
a
gonna,
washing
I'm
machine.
I'm going to write this down now on the notepad. Washing
so,
machine.
About the size of a washing machine. And they say this thing was about once a month, they say, a meteor about that size enters the Earth's atmosphere. It so happens that this one was near populous areas, but moreover, they said, the biggest thing was everybody's, because it's in the news, because it's on the Atlantic Voice podcast talking about it, everybody is now sensitized to it, and so they see this, they immediately rushed out to Twitter, and all tweeted, look, here's a picture of a meteor, and I don't know if they got any pictures, but in any event, they're all over the thing, and so now it seems like it's happening all the time. So more stats, just for... They said there was no wave idea that these meteors, once a month for this one, basically, or once every 3 weeks, they said baseball-sized meteors, to use a smaller size, we'll talk about the size again in a second, those are basically every day. Every day a baseball-sized meteor enters
the
atmosphere.
I'm not having that. I can't see a baseball 100 yards away with my declining eyesight as I reach indeterminate middle age.
Well, it doesn't matter whether
How
you can see it.
How can a baseball coming into the atmosphere, a baseball-sized meteor coming into the atmosphere, how can that light up the sky?
Oh, I don't think they say it lights up the sky.
So how do you know it's there?
But I think they have more sophisticated instruments than a bunch of us staring at the sky.
Some drones, probably.
Yeah, that's right.
So wait a minute now. Let me get this straight. And I'm going to take your car metaphor.
Right.
You buy a car, next thing you know, everyone else has got that car.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So that's the metaphor for some fella saw a meteor, and now all of us are seeing them.
Yep.
So what did we think they were before, or were we just not looking up in the sky?
We weren't paying attention, you know. Oh, look, that went along. And then it's how much you talk about it. Like, you know, if you saw
this... legitimately before, we might have gone, ooh, that's a UFO, and
maybe.
Rather than a meteor.
Or we might have said, oh, look, a shooting star, and that would be it. You know, you just don't think about it. But now you go... Wow, there was that one that exploded in Russia. Look at that thing. And everybody starts talking about it. Heck, you know what could be part of it? It wouldn't be in the newspaper, right? The same number of people could have seen it. The reason it's in the newspaper is because there was one over in Russia.
Okay.
You know, so that part of this is what we're actually reading the articles. We probably wouldn't have gotten an article about it.
I don't want to pick on our friends in Russia, although the last time I looked at our stats, we actually have some listeners in Norway, but we don't have any listeners in Russia. So I'm going to say this. You sure it's not bits of, like, the Russian space station falling off?
It could be, I guess. I don't know. What's weird is the way...
Oh, that's why you said washing machine. I don't know. Maybe it's the washing machine from that space station Mir just finally coming to Earth.
They describe it in one of the parts of the articles as hitting the Earth, but I don't actually think it means hitting the Earth. I think it means hitting the Earth's atmosphere, because if these things were hitting the Earth once a month, I think we would know more about this
yes.
thing. But the washing machine thing I thought was funny because I was... you know, it's an appropriate metaphor. You know, the washing machine, while obviously not round or whatever shape, but it's got a lot of heft to it, right? Like, okay. we can perceive like a washing machine being thrown off of the second floor and like kind of
smashing the car.
That's not the same now. Apparently, this meteor was going 15 miles a second, or 50,000 miles per hour. Translate that. That's pretty fast. So imagine getting hit by a washing machine going that speed.
That would be something. Although I'm sure your washing machine actually, when it spins at those speeds.
And not quite that fast. Right, well. But boy, that clothes would get dry if that was the case. But I was trying to think, what else would you analogize it to? Like, you know, what would be that size? That what else could you use? Like, if you wanted to have it,
a meteor the size of a car.
But that's much bigger than a washing machine. You know? Okay. I mean, a washing machine, you can get up and down the stairs. You can't do that with a car. But
I would have said a TV, but TVs are all flat screen.
That's right. And now they're easy to carry. I mean, part of it, I think it is the heft. Like, because you can think of other objects that would be roughly the size of a washing machine, but it doesn't feel like the right thing to describe a meteor as, because you want something that feels like, well, that's really heavy. It would, like, smash things up kind of thing. You know, you could just say, oh, it's like a small moving box. You know, it's like basically the size.
Or, that's not very intimidating.
Exactly.
If I see you and you're threatening to throw a small moving box at me, I'm laughing. But if I see you lobbing a washing machine down the stairs towards me,
at 15 miles a second,
yeah, I'm going to get out of the way.
Yeah, so I thought it was sort of interesting the way we compare those things. And a baseball, obviously, another solid item, kind of a known. But you could say an orange, right? I mean, you know, same sort of size, basically.
Yeah,
but nobody's really worried about getting hit by an orange. But
that's what I'm saying. I'm not intimidated by meteors smaller than a microwave oven.
That's your cutoff.
So even if you threw like a microwave oven at me, so again, you're at the top of the stairs.
Yeah.
And you're thinking, I'm tired of my partner, I'm going to take him out. If I'm at the bottom of the stairs and you start rolling a washing machine down the stairs towards me, I'm SOL.
Yeah, yeah.
But if you're standing there with a toaster oven above your head about to chuck it at me, I'm thinking, I will just lithely step out of the way.
Or you'd have a reasonable chance of catching or deflecting. I mean, it's not going to be easy, but you could do that. You can't do that with a washing machine.
No, no.
You
end up like on Tom and Jerry, where you're like sort of flattened to the side of it as it rolls down the stairs. Yeah.
So, but you know, we need to come up with a meteor categorization system that is based on what you would least like to be hit, you know, or, you know, different degrees of being hit by things being thrown down a staircase.
Do you think that's the aliens' plan then? Is to attack us with objects that are the same size of things. Like, again, I think people have established in the last 1 minute, I would be terrified if someone is rolling a washing machine down the stairs towards me.
Yeah.
So maybe that's what the aliens are thinking.
They could be, and it would be very, very sly of them to make it seem like it was sort of naturally occurring.
Because, again, my position is unchanged. There's something going on here. There's something going on. This has been going on for like a month now. Everyone has seen Independence Day.
Well, the government...
That went on for a couple of weeks, and then they attacked.
The government surely thinks that's something going on, because on Tuesday, just before this Friday meteor, the House Science, Space, and Technology Committee... First of all, I wasn't aware we had a Science, Space, and Technology Committee. They had a hearing on what the United States is doing to track and monitor, quote, near-Earth objects. Not saying it's meteor. Could be alien stuff. Could be anything, but...
Well, what does near Earth mean? Something that might attack.
I mean, I'm a near Earth object, right? I mean, like, I think they mean near Earth objects that are in space. All of us are near Earth objects in some fashion, but I don't think this committee is talking about those. I think the committee is talking about what to deal with, and so they had a hearing. I don't know what happened at the hearing. I probably could have done more research and found out, but the article I'm taking this from, which is a Washington Post article.
I hope Jeff Goldblum was there, because he saved us last time.
Yeah, well, you know.
Him and Will Smith. Remember, Jeff Goldblum was the one when the spaceships came.
Oh, you're thinking of aliens. I thought you were thinking of the Armageddon thing. You know, that was really about...
No, it's Independence Day.
Yeah. That's what I mean. Like, Independence Day is actual aliens.
We're still under attack from things in space.
Yeah, but, you know, Armageddon...
That's the bottom line. These films all get clumped together.
Well, I think...
Under attack from things from space.
I think the government is thinking a bit more from the Armageddon perspective.
Whereas The Rock with Sean Connery, even though that's a rock, that's not in space.
No.
So that's a different sort of Armageddon.
Yeah.
I'm thinking only of things coming from outer space to attack.
Well, I'm thinking the Armageddon with Bruce Willis and Ben Affleck, because that's, I think, where the government's going with this stuff. Basically, the rest of the article talks about NASA people saying, listen, if we had enough warning, we might be able to send something out there to stop it.
What, like Bruce Willis type plan?
Yeah, I think that's the idea, like if they could do this sort of stuff.
Don't we have like laser beams or something Wouldn't this be something like we could make friends with North Korea and give them something to do? They could build their rocket and aim it at the asteroids instead of threatening to aim it at everyone else.
North Korea has become the go-to villain in movies. I think there's a movie coming out right now where they're the villains again, just like they were in the new version of Red Dawn. And you know why that is, right?
Well, because the Russians are our friends now.
Yeah, well, and if you wanted to have a villain, in fact, I think, if I remember the story right, in Red Dawn, the original villain was China. And then they said, we would like to sell this movie to people in China. Oh. And so, so you could pick the North Koreans because the North Koreans are not going to your movie when it goes into worldwide distribution. So now economics trumps all.
They're not expecting a lot of Prometheus DVD sales in North Korea.
Exactly, they're not worried about that.
And if you are listening in North Korea, I'm afraid to say our own film podcast will only be available in English.
My last favorite line from the article is saying they're talking about, if we were able to spot this a certain amount of time in advance, then we could go up there and do something, maybe change its course or, shoot a missile out there or something like that. But the last line is, but if scientists only learned a couple of weeks before the large object was headed towards Earth to a particular spot on Earth, all we could do is evacuate, quote unquote. Evacuate Earth? I mean, what does he mean? Are they able to pinpoint where it's going to... I mean, I don't think... Every time, satellites have fallen out of orbit, they've always been wrong about where they're going to land.
Yes.
And so I'm pretty sure if this thing was hurtling through Earth, through space overall, I know they might be able to figure out it's going to hit us, not hit us, but I don't think they know where it's going to hit us, right?
I wonder if that government evacuate. I wonder if that government spokesman still has a job the next day, or if he has been reassigned to something else. Because it's not reassuring to the public to go, if we don't have enough time, all we're going to be able to do is evacuate.
Yeah.
Because I noticed that was stuck right at the end of the article.
Yeah, just throw that in.
And you showed me that article from.
That's the kind of thing he was saying as he was going away from the reporter, and he was like, "Oh, I shouldn't have said anything." He just his mouth just kept going a too little, too bit, too long.
If it's too late, I guess everyone's on their own.
Best of luck to you.
Best of luck to you.
Maybe that was his ploy, he's trying to pull one of those bits, if the world ended tomorrow, maybe the reporter was a woman and he's a guy and he's going to try to convince her that they should run off to a hotel together because the world is going to end tomorrow, but it didn't work out for him.
Okay, so there you go. There's our latest meteor attack.
Well, and one of the not an attack thing, but one of the lessons of this I take away is space is really crowded. I mean, it's just a lot of stuff. I mean, if we are getting hit every day by baseball-sized meteors
and washing machines,
there's a lot of stuff out there, and this sort of goes back to space as a general matter. And the other space news that was out there, we're not doing an all space podcast, but the other space news was out is the. We have basically baby pictures of the universe that they...
Yes.
These telescopes that are out there, I think what they don't... I think they're actually...
like the Hubble.
They're measuring radio waves more than light, but what they're able to do is turn that into pictures and things like that. And I will explain supposedly what this does, and then I will ask you how this could possibly work. But in any event, the way they
describe
this... I understand.
I know that you're confused by this, but I'm going to be able to explain
it. The way they describe this is... light takes obviously a very long time to get over big enough distances. Light's fast, but it takes a while to get here over the kind of distances we're talking about. And so if they can reach further away, what they really is almost basically seeing back in time because the light was this far away. So,
yes.
For example, the images captured by this telescope show the universe is 13.8 billion years old, which, number one, is somewhat older than they earlier thought. But only the pictures are supposedly of 370,000 years after the Big Bang. So you're talking about amount of time. So the baby pictures, mind you, baby pictures 370,000 years old. We don't think about baby pictures. But in any event, so it's basically like a big cloud. It's supposed to be shortly after the Big Bang.
Okay.
And I get the idea that if the light takes a long distance to go here, but... The Big Bang, the idea was all the matter was in one place and then explodes out.
I get that.
But if we all exploded out, how are we taking the pictures back from behind us? I mean, I don't get this whole system. Okay. We're looking back and which way would we even know to point? I mean, are we off on the edge of the Big Bang and so we're taking back a picture towards the center? I don't understand how this works. Please explain.
This is to do with Albert Einstein's theory of relativity. If you're sitting on a train in a station next to another train, and the other train starts to move, you think that you're moving. That's Albert Einstein's theory of relativity. That's the Cliff Notes version. That's how it's always been explained to me. So I want you at home to apply what I've just told you.
The theory of relativity is when you went around the Earth and then you came back and you'd be younger than your brother or something like that.
But what I'm saying is he invented it when he was sitting on a train in the station.
Okay, how does that explain the picture thing?
Because we're not moving, but it is.
What's moving?
The universe.
I don't feel this is explaining me adequately.
Because it's to do with how if you go faster than light, you're also going faster than time, right? So what I'm saying is this. Look, I'm going to do it on a... They say that a light ray from the sun takes 8 minutes to get here.
Uh-huh.
So what I'm saying is, if you had a telescopic camera powerful enough, you could see it leaving 8 minutes before it arrived. Because it takes 8 minutes to get here. Think of that light ray.
No, that's not the
way. Think of that light ray.
You can only see it because the light got to you.
All right.
But you can't, like, reach out and bring it closer.
Don't think of it like light. Think of it like... Imagine that ray of light is a washing machine.
Yeah.
It takes 8 minutes for the washing machine to get from the sun to Earth.
Uh-huh.
You take a picture of it, because it's going faster than light, you take a picture of it when it's leaving, even though it's already here. Because it's traveled faster than light.
You can only take a picture of something by the light reaching you.
No, but remember, the telescope is already out there.
No, the telescope's not at the sun. But if it's halfway there, it doesn't work that way.
Again, imagine that you're on a train in a station next to another train, and the other train moves. You think you're moving.
This is like the worst science explanation I've ever experienced.
That's how Albert Einstein.
You had told me before we went into this podcast that you were going to be able to explain it to me, and I don't feel that this is explaining it to me.
I've explained it to you. We're able to know this because of Einstein's theory of relativity.
Well, I get that.
And I've just explained to you Einstein's theory of relativity. Everything is relative to something else. Boom, there you go. Done. Okay. Next topic.
Now, the one thing they did say about
the picture... If you're confused at home, please feel free to email us. Yeah. I'm not confused at all.
The only thing I can think of is that the Big Bang, when all the matter went apart...
I'm going to explain it to you right now.
It literally went faster than the light. Like, so we got out a head start, and then the light's catching up.
You're getting
there still.
Okay, I'm going to give you a simpler version, because clearly the simple version of Einstein's theory of relativity didn't work for you. Do you remember in Superman the movie... Not the new one that sucked with the guy who we don't know, Superman, but the old one.
You're not going to be talking about making the Earth go backwards.
It's the same thing, because Superman flew around the Earth so quickly, like faster than the speed of light, that he made everything go backwards, and then he brought everyone back alive because he made time go backwards.
Yeah, it's amazing
this
that you're
is
able
kind
to
of
say
the same
with a straight
as that.
Face.
I don't question these things. When it comes to this sort of science, I don't question it. I just go, that's the physics of it.
All right.
Because I believe in science, so I trust it.
I thought you didn't even believe we landed on the moon.
Well, yeah, because I don't think we had the science to do that.
But one of the other interesting things about the picture is that it's like the cloud of stuff is not what they expected. It's got like cool spots. I think it had like some drafty areas.
Oh, you'd be cool. I thought you meant it's cool looking stuff. I've seen the pictures of it.
Yeah, the picture, but it's like, you
like
know,
it's really pretty.
All their prior science.
I can't believe I've just said that as a grown man. It's really pretty. It's pretty, the colors and everything.
You know, the thing is, that's a whole big cheat though, right? Because...
Okay.
They're not taking pictures of light. They're taking pictures of radio waves, and then they use processing.
I thought it was gas and dust and stuff.
Well, that's what the picture is of.
All these bits that are attacking us, isn't that where they all came from?
But it's like the picture is a set of data. Like, it's like black and white, and they colorized it. Like when they say it's all pretty, that's because they put a bunch of stuff on so we could perceive it, because we can't perceive radio waves, right?
So what does it look like then?
It don't look like anything. I don't know what the heck it looks like.
Well, it looks like a train leaving a station. Yeah. That's how it works. That's the theory of relativity.
But they said it was expected to be, based on the science they had done so far, a regular, smooth pattern. Because it's so long ago that it was so close to the Big Bang that everything should have sort of been evenly distributing. It hadn't reclustered, but it's a very irregular pattern. And so they're a little bit surprised by this, which tells me, right, we just talked about all the science things.
Hence the phrase cluster.
Yeah, right.
It was all a bit of a cluster.
The scientists
Einstein
don't know
used to stay when his plans got
I think
messed
it's,
up.
All these people are talking about this stuff, and you know, we had a good joke about Einstein's theory of relativity and all this sort of
which
stuff.
Which does apply in this instance, people.
And admittedly, I think it's pretty clear that neither of us really understands how this stuff works. But
I don't understand how it works, but I know why it works.
But I'm not sure they... I mean, like, they say these things so confidently. I'm pretty sure that in 50 or 100 years, it'll be a whole different theory. Like, the whole fact that they're getting surprised by stuff. Oh, look, it turns out the galaxy is this much... I mean, rather not galaxy, the universe is this much older than we expected. I don't think they know what they're talking about, so...
Well, and I'm going to agree with you. I want to make a brief comment on science. And I'm very respectful of science. But on something like this, where you can't prove anything, you can just say whatever you like and go, yeah, that's what it is. And I agree with you. In 50 years... someone will come up with a different reason, and you'll go, oh, yeah, that's what it was.
You end up with people having a podcast talking about this stuff and trying to sort out things about trains leaving stations.
But that's why Albert Einstein's theory of relativity, that has survived the test of time.
Actually, I think there's...
And I don't mean that as a pun on time, because it does explain time travel.
If somebody knows more science, I think actually a bunch of those theories have been refuted over the years, and it's all, like, modified stuff.
Yeah, but
there was something recently came out that somebody
I've sat on a train and seen another train leaving, and for a brief second I've thought, ooh, we're moving. And it's only then when I realized that we haven't. And that's the whole point, because everything is relative to everything
else. That's true. It is relative.
Yeah.
I don't know if that answers any
questions. Are we done with space?
I think we are done with space.
Okay, so I'd like
to... We've sorted it out.
So, okay, I have a segue to get to our next topic
of
yard work, but I was wondering if you had a segue.
Between space and yard work?
Yes.
No, let's use yours.
Okay. We've just talked about the Big Bang being a load of dust and stuff being thrown out there. Apparently you wanted to talk about yard work because it would appear that your yard is a bit of a mess because you still haven't tidied up your leaves from October.
Now I have. So
that was a pretty good segue.
Yeah,
there's all kinds of crap out in your yard, and it looks like the Big Bang out there.
There was definitely a lot of dust. I was using a leaf blower.
Okay.
And I was also
you see, and that's what the Big Bang...
The
if you're an ant in your garden and you're out there with a leaf blower and you're an ant, you're looking up. And to your ant buddies, you think you are seeing creation.
It could be.
There you go.
They're probably having a podcast
about it
now.
And one ant is going to another. You know something? It was kind of pretty.
That's right. I didn't understand it, but it was very pretty.
All right, so you've got a great garden. I want to say this to you. You grow stuff, like things you can eat.
Yeah, I'm talking about the whole backyard. I do have some gardening things going on for growing things, but mostly it's all the landscaping around the backyard, which, by the way, you know, some people know us, and so they'll know our backyard, but it's a postage stamp of a backyard. I mean, it's a no-grass thing. We've got, you know, a nice deck and little plants and landscaping and things like that. But also, if people live around here, they'll already know the situation that I'm describing here. But for people who aren't from around this area, maybe if you're from further north and you're accustomed to normal falls like I grew up in Washington, D.C., we're now at the point with the seasons that the leaves don't finish falling until, like, December. And then you immediately go into, like, cold weather, you know, and it starts raining and, you know, and you can't get... So for the past couple of years, you've got this, like, tiny window. I'm sitting there, like, literally standing underneath the trees saying... in late November saying, it would be helpful if you would drop these on the ground so I could rake them up and put them away. And so last year I was able to get the front yard done before we were into like late December, but I wasn't able to get the backyard done. And so like a lot of leaves, they collect in the corners and things like that. And so I spent yesterday principally cleaning things up and cleaning up like, you know, the plants that would grow, you know, they grow each year, the perennials. And so the old dead stalks are around. And I had to clean all that sort of stuff up yesterday, which is... it's still a fairly pleasing exercise. It's probably less pleasing than it was. It's an enjoyable activity, outdoors, doing work, all this sort of stuff. I mean, I remember when
You're not convincing me.
I know, I'm sure I'm not. But when I was a kid and did all this sort of work around the yard, like raking leaves was simple stuff. I always hated raking from under the bushes. I still hate doing that, although a leaf blower helps out with that sort of stuff. But, you know, pulling all these leaves out and junk like that. But it's very, like, you're... putting order on things, and it's sort of pleasing that way, but it is starting to wear thin on me.
But before we go deeper into this issue of yard work, I want to stay on this leaf raking business for a moment. Aren't you interfering with the cycle of life by raking the leaves up? Because before we had gardens, the trees, they shed their leaves, right? And it like turns into mush, and then that fertilizes the ground for other things to grow. So aren't you getting in the way of the cycle of life by raking up the leaves? Aren't you supposed to leave them there so that they turn to mush, go into the ground, and then make the other stuff grow? Nitrates, I think, actually is what it is. See, people think I don't know anything about science, but those of you that have just listened to me explain the theory of relativity, you'll know now when I talk about nitrates.
You really
know
about science.
Because you're just going to fertilize that ground anyway, so why not just let the leaves stay there? Why rake it up in the first place?
There's a grain of truth in what you say.
That's except, all I need to hear.
Except the problem is, all that would be a valid theory if we lived in trees. You know, and like we just lived in the woods and there wasn't anything else. The problem is, we human beings change the environment they live in, always have. We wouldn't live in houses. We wouldn't have yards. We wouldn't have a deck in the backyard. We wouldn't have a lawn. So if you didn't have any of those things, and so you literally would live in the woods, you're right.
But doesn't it help the grass grow?
Yes. So, but it also will kill the grass. Like if you covered your front lawn with leaves, rotting leaves, your grass isn't going to grow because it's going to be covered. You'll be wonderfully putting back your nutrients. Now, it will please you to know, given your great environmental concern,
I am,
that when I pull up the leaves, I shred them, I compost them, I put them back into the soil, I use them in those ways, so I do not just throw them out. It is true that when you take your leaves and you just put them in bags and you send them off, you're just throwing away nutrients each year.
All right, so basically, you rake up the leaves, put them in a compost heap, right? Well, then take all that.
I shred them with a little shredder thing.
Then you take all that and put it back out where the leaves originally fell. Is that what you're telling me? Why not just leave them?
Because it'll kill the stuff it's covering.
Okay. Here's the bottom
line. Plus,
a
leaf takes a while to decompose if you don't break it down, and so you'll just end up with a mess.
Right.
Do you like my backyard?
I do. I think
you have complimented our stone bridge.
You have a whole like sort of Japanese Zen garden thing going on. You grow fruits and vegetables that I have eaten.
Yeah.
I'm very impressed because I don't have a green finger on my body.
Yeah. Fed by compost. But if we didn't do that, all the nice little pretty stone things would just be covered with leaves that would be rotting, and it wouldn't be very pleasing to sit out in the backyard.
All right. I don't know. I just this sounds like a long way of getting around the fact that I gave you a hard time that you hadn't done your leaves and we were now in spring.
No, well, that
I might just leave it now. Why didn't they blow away in the winter?
Well, because it was a fence. The backyard is all fenced in, and so it collects in. It is true. I mean, you know, where I grew up, there were more woods around, and you could kind of ignore it because it eventually would sort of blow off the edges and things like that. And my front yard, actually, if I didn't clean up the leaves, I think probably by spring they'd all be gone. You know, they would have blown away and things like that. But
yeah, but if you leave it all piled up there, the neighbors complain. Yeah, you look like some sort of crazy shut-in who's down in the basement talking to himself
and
or to his friend all day
and leaving your Christmas lights up till March.
There you go, exactly. So you're a deadbeat neighbor.
So you know. So I did all that work. And the other thing about it now, at this my ripe old age, is that. Doing yard work, well, you know, you get back is sort of classic. The doing yard work, though, you end up working weird muscles. Like I was picking things up with my hands, and so like my thumb is sore now, like from like pulling things up and things like that, and oddball spots in your because of all you're doing getting through the bushes, and I got scratches on my neck, and I like banged into a deck, you know, stand and things like that. How did your yard work go this year?
I don't have a yard. And my body is in pretty decent condition. I don't have a sore thumb.
Let's not get carried away with that part about the decent condition.
Because I don't have a yard. I've not unnecessarily contorted my body into unnatural positions, and I'm not spending the rest of the day throwing back a light alcoholic beverage and 6 aspirin. Because I don't have a yard. I'm from the big city. The only time I grew up when we had a garden, my grandma used to do house plants.
Mm-hmm.
I understand that sort of, you know, watering them and moving them into the light.
We heard about the Christmas tree in your
that's right.
In our
Christmas episode where my mother believed you could keep a Christmas tree alive from year to year. I understand the sort of the soothing nature of growing plants. I get there's a routine, you water them. You talk to them, you know, you trim them. I understand that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also for growing vegetables because you can eat them. At the same time, myself personally, if I have a choice between doing all those things or sitting on the couch watching TV, I'm going to sit on the couch and watch TV.
Yeah, well.
Also, I think part of the reason, too, is when I grew up, we did live in a house in suburban London for a couple of years. It had a small garden. That was the only time growing up that I was actually had a garden. But because we were normally apartment dwellers, we moved into this house and we didn't have any tools. And I remember being out in the back trimming the grass with a pair of kitchen scissors.
Oh, that's it.
And I knew then that this was all too much work. We used to have a cat at the time, and the cat would go out into the back, and he would eat the grass. And I was more than happy to sit back and let him chew away, knowing that that was trimming the grass a little bit.
A very close family member of the Atlantic Voice podcast did a stint where she was assisting a woman in sort of household duties and sort of not a personal assistant, but helping out and taking care of things. Ended up being asked to trim some bushes outside and was handed a pair of pinking shears.
That's, yeah.
You know, pinking shears are those zigzag ones, yes, that you use for, like, fabric. And I believe that might have been the day she quit the job.
Exactly.
Because it was the idea of going outside and trimming the bushes with pinking shears was a little bit too much to bear.
No, don't get me wrong. I've done manual labor.
Well, I was going to say, I've done manual labor. Have you done anything in the nature of landscaping, or has it really been the...
No, I like digging holes and, like, stuff to do with building houses. But at the same time, I was getting paid. So I don't mind. I'll hurt my thumb and hurt my back if I'm getting paid. But if I'm doing all that for no reason than to look at the back and go, doesn't it look pretty, I need something more compelling than that.
I suspect there's a bit of this that it's like, it's because of what you got brought up doing. Like, you know, my father, you know, we would go out and do the leaves, and, you know, you put some order on the backyard. We had a garden growing up. And so when you do it yourself, your circuits are designed to derive pleasure out of that. That is, whereas if you didn't grow up doing it, you go, oh, why would I do that? I didn't do it before. I did other things.
That's exactly right.
And it's sort of interesting. The other thing I want to ask you, this is going to sound maybe like a dumb question, but so many of our questions on this show are.
But some of the answers have been amazing. Because who else? Why? Any listeners, did you actually believe you were going to hear about Albert Einstein today?
Do people rake leaves in England? I'm trying to think of, like, the type of trees. There's not really a lot of trees generally, right? Because, like, historically...
No, I think people do.
But
we're doing a lot of cross promotion this episode. Remember our Halloween episode where we talked about Guy Fawkes and we talked about Halloween? That's the time of year because, and even though Britain right now is being battered by snowstorms, Britain, unlike here on the east coast of the United States, still has four pretty distinct seasons. And they're four seasons that still tend to keep to a very traditional timetable of the leaves fall off in October, snow comes in December. Well, one of the things you do is you break them all up and you have bonfires. Because the rules about lighting, having bonfires are different than they are in this country. Like, what if you get out into the country in England, someone somewhere's always got a fire going.
Yeah.
And that's more like the country around here.
I mean, yeah. But we're accustomed to where we are. Yeah, you can't really burn a fire in the backyard of your tenth of an acre lot.
You have to keep your property. If you live within the city confines, you have to keep your property tidy from leaves and, you know.
It's funny. It's just like a piece. It's a piece I don't picture in English culture, but, you know, stands a reason you'd have it.
It's just the same. Yeah. People look after them. Here's the one difference in England, though. In England, every house that has a garden has it fenced off. And even the front of the house will be either fenced off or hedged off.
Do people do, like, a lot of ornamental trees, like pear trees and apple trees and things like that in their backyards?
And people take pride with their hedgerows.
Yeah. Well, those keep their leaves, you know, so that's...
Well, yeah, but people are using their shears to make, little ducks and stuff. Yeah. Like, do you know what I mean? Little shapes.
Yep.
Because all the houses, it's not like here where everyone leaves their front yard open to the street so that everyone can see their house. In England, if you have a big enough plot of land, you're going to put a wall in front or you're going to have a hedgerow in front because...
Maybe a moat. We'll put a moat.
I think that's been a big stream. But no, but it does come back to this sense of my home is my castle.
Mm-hmm.
So no, there is a sense thinking, that if you've got a home, you want your privacy. So by extension, you do tend to work on the facade because that's all people are going to see.
Mm-hmm.
So people, you know, there is a very traditional sort of stereotype of the middle-aged Englishman clipping his front hedges, the hedges in front of his house with a big pair of shears because he wants to keep it tidy.
You guys don't have a lot of situations, like, you know, the classic thing around American is, you know, you have the town with everybody having a front porch. You know,
we don't have porches.
And everybody sits out on the front porch and you walk down the street, hey, neighbor, hey, Joneses, hey, Smiths, you know, all this
no,
sort of
we
stuff.
No, we don't have porches
really
in England.
That's not really a big thing for your guys.
Well, no, because the weather is crap.
That could be part of it. But you don't have bugs, right? So that's the
wackiest. No, you don't have bugs.
There's no bugs. You guys all have...
Here's what you don't have. You don't have screen windows.
Yeah.
So when you open a window, all the flies come in the house and you're always having to spray with the thing.
But you don't have mosquitoes. You don't have, like, the things that are biting you all the time. I mean, like, around here, you could not... most of America, you could not have, like, you don't just throw a window open. You'll end up, like, malaria or something.
Yeah, I never
like
open the windows here. You're going to be joking. No bugs and stuff in my house.
Well, so we all have screens, but that was the first time I went to London and they opened the window and I'm like, well, things are going to come in here. I mean, what is it? Just an open window and nothing ever happened. I mean, yeah, you do get occasional fly, but it's not
that's why back in England, I think people are much more conscientious about, you know, raking their leaves, because you open the window, the leaves are going to blow in the house.
But you don't have, like, a lot of I don't picture a lot of forests. I mean, I know there are forests, but, most of, like, you picture, like, in Scotland, the countryside, it's mostly...
bleak.
Yeah, well, it's not bleak, necessarily, but it's not covered in trees like the Appalachians are.
No, that's actually true, yeah.
You know, kind of thing like that. It's just sort of a different terrain, probably.
But also because the climate is different.
Yeah.
You know, it's obviously windy and cold and, you know, just sort of vaguely miserable.
Hmm.
Is that it for your book?
I think so.
All right. What's our segue is? What's our segue now? We always promise these things come together. I'm going to give you a segue because now we're going to cover fantasy sports because we're in the middle of the NCAA tournament here in the U.S. and everyone fills out a bracket. We were going to spend a moment about picking, doing fantasy sports and having fantasy teams. I think it's a fantasy to think that you'll actually do your leaves on time in the future.
Okay.
That's the weakest segue ever.
That's pretty bad.
That was pretty bad. But you know, as Einstein would say, it's all relative.
The fantasy sports are seasonal. So maybe
yes, there you go.
There, like, you know, it's whatever's coming up.
I'm in a bracket this year.
Yeah.
And for people back in England that don't know what we're talking about, everyone in England has the FA Cup, which is a knockout soccer tournament that takes place over about 4 months with all the professional teams.
Yeah.
Or Wimbledon, which everyone in England knows is the tennis tournament, and there's a great big bracket, player 1 through 64, and they go all the way through, and Andy Murray invariably loses in the semis or the final. Here in the United States, the college basketball teams end their season with a big tournament like the FA Cup, but unlike the FA Cup, which is spread out over about 8 months, this takes place on 3 consecutive weekends.
Yep.
And so like Wimbledon or the US Open, all the teams are in a great big bracket, and it's a tradition in the same way that
64 teams.
You
know, it's actually 68 now that they've added a few more games, but for all intents and purposes, and of course, 64 teams.
One of the big traditions here is offices or groups of people get together and they fill out a bracket and you put all your brackets in, and the one who does the best wins the money. And it's in the same way that everyone always bets on the derby or derby, as they say here. It's one of those great things where everyone's in betting, even if you don't follow the sport.
Yeah, you like give $5, $10 entry fee, and it becomes like a, almost like a lottery, which is the complaint about it now at this point, is that it's never the person who really knows the most about sports. I mean, people spend all this time studying this stuff up, and somebody down the hall from you who just did it on a whim and picked them on the basis of mascots
ends up winning this thing or colors, something like that. Places where her niece went to school.
Right.
I'm like, yeah. But let me say this. All gambling is a lottery, is it?
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't object to
this.
This
comes from
basis,
someone who's a gambler.
I have gotten to the point of sort of, I started to do my picks where I spend a lot less time on them because I'm like, it's not going to work out. My office pool is a rather big one. I mean, it has a solid 200 or so entries.
How much each?
$10 each.
So there's some cash there.
Big prize. But like the idea that you like, even if you are right, you're going to be wrong. I mean, you could be the most astute picker. It's just not going to go that way. And at the end of the day, it ends up being basically a lottery.
So it sounds like you've taken a more blasé approach to it this year.
Yeah.
How many sheets did you fill out?
It's 2.
That's not blasé.
That's just 2.
That's 2. That means at a certain level, you wanted to win it. If you just entered 1 sheet, that's because Frank from down the hallway is organizing the pool. He's come to you and he said, oh, Eric, are you going to turn in your sheet? Yeah, you turn in 1. You give him the money and you think, that's that $10 gone.
I will say,
you've turned in 2. So even though you're trying to be, you've got no chance of winning, I don't know why I bother, there's this undercurrent of it's all a waste of time, you still turned in 2. And deep down inside, on at least one of those, you're thinking, this is the one that's going to win me $200.
No, well, that last part's not right, but because I don't know which one's going to win. I will say the benefit of two, and I'll tell you why I'm not going to do two anymore probably after this, but the benefit of two, when it comes to one of these pools where you're not going to win, what you want to do is be towards the top at the end, so like you've got some credibility as a sports fan.
Okay, all right.
So if you do two,
because you want to be the old lady who picked it on mascots.
Nobody
and
notices
colors.
The one that came in like second to last. They'll notice, oh, you know, you were in the top 20. Nice effort there. Well, you put two in, you've increased your odds of being in the top 20, and nobody's going to notice the one that fell off on the wayside.
It's true.
But the problem is when you do two, of course, you invariably do all your picks, and then you the second time through, obviously, you're not going to pick the same, so you start varying them around and you're switching them back and forth, and I forget which I picked in which pool, right?
Yes,
so I find myself like when the games are going to go, oh wait a minute, I'm rooting for this team on this one, this team on this one, and like they'll be close to each other. And then the first weekend will come in and like one of your sheets will be ahead, but all those first round games are worth a small amount of points because each classic pool, each round is worth like more points.
The first
games are 1 point, 2 point, 4 point, 8 point. Well, you feel like that first one's leading, but it's such a small amount of points compared to the bigger games later on. Then suddenly your sheets will change around and all that sort of stuff. So I may just do one. And the other reason I might do only one next year is that I've got a couple of friends who are doing more interesting pools. I don't know if you've done any of the more interesting pools. So like one version is, and this is a simplified modification, is they seed it out, right? So people know, like, just like in the tennis tournament.
Okay.
You know, like they there's the one seed, two seed, three seed, blah, blah, blah. And the way the NCAA works, this could be really boring to any Americans listening because they all know this already, is that there's a 1 through 16 in each of the four brackets, blah, blah, blah. And so your one seeds are the people that everybody's expecting to go to the end. Well, one way you could do a pool is you get extra point, like you get the number of points the seed is.
I've always thought that's a good idea.
So it inspires you to make more risky picks. You're going to end up with pools that aren't just everybody's stuff, finishing with the same final four. And there, maybe you get some more rewards for knowing that the number 12 is going to upset the number 5 kind of thing because you get 12 points.
But then you run the risk of the older lady down the hallway who doesn't know anything about sports, who's only picked it based on team colors and mascots. She's not using any logic when she fills out her sheet.
Yeah.
She will invariably win this way because she would have picked all kinds of off-the-wall teams. And then she's getting all kinds of points. And then at the end of it, when she's getting the money, you're sitting there thinking, Janice doesn't know anything about basketball. I can't believe I've lost to her again this year.
I was just visiting with a friend yesterday who has a pool that's run sort of like that. And he runs the pool, and he has twin daughters who are, they can't be older than 8, I don't think. At the moment, those twin daughters are 1 and 2 in the pool.
That's what I'm
like
saying.
60 people.
That's what
like
I'm saying.
That.
That's the, but you know,
the thing is, they may be smarter than him. So.
He has the ideal scam going because they're not even old enough to know what they're doing. So he's going to cover their entry fee. Plus, he's going to put his own in. Everyone's going to laugh at him on Monday when his kid wins. But who's getting that money?
My perception
he's
is these kids are astute enough that they're winning. But the other version of the pool, and this is another one he runs as well, is you do an auction where y'all get together, you have $100. I don't know if they put $100 in or not, but it's,
okay,
you know, they've at least got an imaginary $100, and then you start auctioning off teams. And so you, if you get a team in it, it's your team. And so you auction all 64 teams off to the people who are in the pool, and like you bid on any teams and things like that. So the number ones are obviously worth more. Because you're
so
more
you're
likely
trying
to get
bid on the winner,
right? You're trying to bid on the winner, get the most wins.
But once the winner's gone, it's gone.
You don't have anything. So, like for example, out of his $100 budget, he had spent $37 in Gonzaga,
and that $37, he's not seeing that.
It's not worth a penny now. So they got one win and then they lost. So,
well, I want you to know, I only entered one. I used to enter 4 or 5 every year. And I've had some success. I won it once about four in my place of employment. I won it once about 4 or 5 years ago, and thanks to that, I continually promote myself as an expert. And I can back it up because I won it once.
Yeah,
I only entered one sheet this year. I didn't do a lot of time into it. I entered one sheet. I've said to myself, I'm not even going to follow it. I used to be one of those people that, as the scores came in,
because again, marking it on your sheet there.
For those of you back across the Atlantic, this is like the FA Cup, but the early rounds don't just occur on a Saturday. They occur during the workday. Like, there are games going nonstop from 12 noon until 11 o'clock at night.
Yeah, so the Thursday and Friday of the first weekend is when everybody's playing, and so that's the
so
first round.
There are like 40 games over 3 days.
Well,
so you can
figure out exactly. There's 64 teams, and so there's 32 games over 2 days.
See, and this I find is fascinating. You have a scientific mind. You just did that in about 5 seconds, and yet the whole light and Big Bang thing completely boggles you.
Because I was operating on facts rather than made up things about trains.
It completely boggles you. So those first couple of days, every sense of you, if you have a computer job or you work near a TV, there are constantly scores coming up. You get some real nutcases, their work rate goes completely through the floor. All they're doing is looking for scores and crossing off their bracket.
There's been a bunch of economic analysis of the lost work to that.
Yes.
There's a significant amount of lost work to that. A lot of people cut out of work early. Back in younger days when I could cut out of work early and had a more flexible job situation, I would just, you know, we'd go off the day, head
off,
out there, because
the
they run, all those games are running concurrently, and nowadays they run on different states. They used to make you'd watch CBS and it would rotate from game to game.
Yeah.
And you couldn't see the other games, but now, you know, they'd use the multiple networks, and so all the games are on, and so you can go into a bar or pub, and watch all the games on all the TVs at the same time. This is all going to be horribly boring for the Americans who know this stuff and are probably sick and tired of their tournament because their sheets have already lost at this point. But
well, if you are one of those people, I want you to know that one of your friends here at the Atlantic Voice, I entered one sheet.
Yeah.
I've not bothered crossing off a single game. I've taken no interest. As of the time of recording, I am currently leading in our pool.
Is that right?
So at some level, like your garden, I've taken a zen-like approach to it all. And I am a couple of days nearer the money.
I take it you didn't take Georgetown in your pool.
I took them for a couple of rounds, but I wasn't going all in on them, and that tends to be the team. That's the team I support. I wasn't taking them to go all the way. Because when it comes to money, I'm going to admit this now. When it comes to money, don't matter what team I'll bet against England in the World Cup if I think I'm going to win money.
Sure.
But I do have a personal rule. Because I'm an Arsenal fan back in the UK, I never bet on us. I only bet on us when I think we're going to win.
Because
I never.
There's a line that you.
Yeah, there is
cross.
A line. I'm a man of standards. I'm not.
You like Arsenal more than you like your country.
Yeah, I'll bet against England. Well, because that's a good bet, because England are probably going to lose. I mean, I'm not stupid. I'm not a moron.
I mean, the fun thing about when you do that, when you put a wager on the other side, is you have an emotional hedge on it, right? So, like, you basically say, you could do this with Arsenal, basically, like, well, listen, if Arsenal loses, at least I win money. If they win,
I'm willing to pay
the amount of money of my bet for the win.
Okay, yeah, I get that.
Yeah,
but,
so
I don't think I could.
The problem is if they do lose, even though you lose the money, you feel like you caused it to happen. You get all superstitious about it. And
that's
like that.
True.
I mean, you personally, but people generally.
No, yeah, you get the blame. So anyway, right as of the moment, I'm leading in my bracket.
Right.
And I've tried to take a very, I don't even know the scores of the games. Right. So I can actually watch the thing without any sense of disappointment.
Yeah, that's good.
Because everyone says that when you fill out these brackets, it actually boosts interest in the event. And that's true. All kinds of people who would not normally watch an event are engaged in it. It's true with the big horse races.
Yeah.
You know, in England, there's the old expression, when we have our derby and we have another race called the Grand National, the housewife's choice. And that always means, yeah, that's the one that all the ladies who never, never gamble, but they're going to go and gamble on this one race of a year.
Mm-hmm.
All these people are suddenly invested in this sport, but because they're invested in it, it's ruined for them. Because there's nothing worse than watching something knowing, great, this is costing me $10.
Yeah.
Now, more hardcore gamblers like myself, you know that comes with the territory. But I feel bad for all these once-in-a-year fans who are all excited, they filled out their bracket, and then they are sitting there suffering the agony of watching their money just get flushed away.
Yeah, well, that's why hopefully they're just playing $10 sheets and they're laying like thousands of dollars on particular games, and hopefully it's not a slippery slope and you find out you're...
Because gambling's not about the money.
There's a bunch
it's
of,
about the winning.
You know, there's a bunch of legal issues with that. So, I mean, because it is gambling. Gambling in most places in America is illegal. And so, you know, you have a lot of... it's sort of comical, you know, secret words on like the way that you do your office pool. A lot of offices will be very sensitive to this
stuff.
Where they, yeah, because they don't want to have, they're endorsing, you know, a gambling event.
That's true,
in
yeah.
which the employees participate and lose money, which is at least technically illegal, if not not enforced, kind of thing. Well, and so I think our current pool in our office is donating 10% of everything to charity to maybe assuage the guilt.
Well, it's funny. I had a couple of friends over from England this week, and you know, I met them, took them out for dinner, and we ended up talking about Premiership soccer, and you know, we were talking about, you know, gambling on games and stuff like that. And they were surprised. I think people that don't live in America are constantly surprised to hear how gambling, which is what this is technically illegal. Do you know what I mean? Whereas in a country like in the UK, you're betting all day on horses or
they got, you know,
whatever.
They got the little lad.
There's no hang up at all.
Whatever
yeah,
it is, just, right on the street, you just dash on in there and place a wager on some event.
Yeah.
They're having a big fight. You know, it's been topic for another day. They're having a bit of a thing in New Jersey because of the desire to have sports betting. And then the sports are basically saying, listen, if you're going to have sports betting, we're not having sporting events in your state. And, you know, the only place
it would get fixed.
Yeah, I mean, that's the big issue. I mean, the only place that's really has a sports book, I think maybe some reservations do, but Las Vegas is the place with the sports book. But
don't they have? But what about New Jersey? Don't they have off-track betting in New Jersey?
Yeah, well, horses being different, I guess, although, you know, one of the most easily fixed sports. But for whatever reason, that's even places that are legalizing gambling, like Maryland now, legalizing table games, they won't have sports books.
Yeah, that's a shame, because that's the only thing I really know.
Yeah.
Well, I have limited knowledge of this.
The only thing you know, it's all relative.
But it is all relative. There you go, which seems as good a way as any to bring our show to the end. Is there anything else we needed to cover before we exited out of the show today? Oh, well, as always, how are your resolutions coming along?
Well, I haven't done my little knife work because that's next weekend.
Before you explain, I'm going to be hung up on this resolution thing because I remember anyone who listened to our show back at Christmas and the New Year, I was very clear about how I am cynical of resolutions, full stop. And you were like, no, I'm making resolutions. So now, as an experiment, I'm going to see if you hold it to them. And now you almost feel like, for you, the cost of failure for your resolution isn't like you're not getting something, but the fact is you're going to make me right.
Oh, I don't really care.
Oh, all right. So anyway, how are your resolutions coming along?
There's nothing. No news.
Did you have your knife skills cooking lesson?
No, that's next weekend.
Oh.
So by the time we next get together, I'll have some more knife work. The knife work was really kind of a throwaway resolution. I'm not really going to be held that one. That was just sort of a fun.
No, I know. I'm not holding you too.
The fajitas, I need to work my fajitas a little harder, kind of thing, get more fajitas. I did have Chipotle steak tacos.
Cheap Tex-Mex food. So you're not giving Chipotle a shout out.
No.
Although we still believe in you as a company.
Chipotle spices are like the spices on the meat. It just they don't taste like real spices. It's like
food Tex-Mex, isn't it?
It's kind of
be appealing to everyone.
No, but it's actually quite spicy. But it doesn't taste like an actual spice. It's like they came up with some chemical that will create heat. You know, in it, but it's not like a spice that you're like. You know, what is it? It doesn't taste like pepper. It just seems sort of
like a
spice, generically spice. Yeah, exactly.
It tastes like
it's a sort of fake spice kind of thing.
What about the meat?
I'm kind of a...
Was it proper meat?
Yeah, it was pretty good. Yeah. I mean, listen.
It wasn't horse.
It was the steak ones, and they pork ones and things like that. But for steak, it's way better than like a Taco Bell or something like
that. But you are keeping at it, though.
The Chipotle, I think, used to be owned by McDonald's. I can't remember what the deal is.
I thought they still are, aren't they? Didn't McDonald's take them over? So that means there's not going to be horse in it. There's going to be kangaroo.
No, most
McDonald's for years have fought off the "there's kangaroo in our burger" allegations. If you Google kangaroo McDonald's, you get all kinds of stories come out, mainly from the English press.
Would that be easier to get than meat? Like I get the horse thing, right? You know, you could come up with horse meat, but is there that much kangaroo meat running around that it'd be worthwhile to substitute it in for beef?
I don't think there's any other use for it. So there's a lot of it just sort of going to waste, isn't there?
Is there? I mean,
there's a lot
of kangaroos being killed.
Well, but what I'm saying is you're using, like, one of the reasons that beef, like, you're using cows for milk. Horses, they're pulling carts and they're racing, so they have other uses.
Well, and
kangaroos, what else do they do?
I mean, the big problem with horses.
You might as well turn them into a hamburger.
People who are in the horses.
So McDonald's, this is not a criticism. I'm all for it. Once you put that secret sauce on the Big Mac, I don't care what I'm having.
The analogy between kangaroos and horses is not holding together here for
me. No, but what I'm saying is horses and cows are animals that have other uses. So you can't go hacking them up. Because they already have another skill set, it seems a bit wasteful to go hacking them up for food. Kangaroos don't do anything else except bounce around and then appear on flags of Australia.
Well, but you could just leave them bouncing around.
That's not really of any use to anyone. I mean, what I'm saying is they are an animal living a life of leisure.
Yeah, but it doesn't become meat until somebody kills it and goes through the effort.
Oh, and then at that moment, the animal is then pitching into society.
Right, but I'm saying there's...
We all go to our bit, you know.
It's not like there's a flood of kangaroo meat.
And for kangaroos,
it's
the same thing.
Like, if that was the case, then all of our meat in America should be substituted deer. Like, the deer are overpopulating everything. And if you wanted to, like, you know, you could substitute in deer meat instead of beef.
Actually, no, I'm going to take what I've said back about kangaroos. I've just hammered kangaroos for being sort of animals that don't give anything back. Kangaroo leather... they use for shoes and stuff, and it's a very soft, supple leather. So any kangaroo listeners out there, please don't take offense. You are a species that have some, you know, value to society.
Actually, the horse thing, I mean, there's a serious topic in the horse part because...
we'll do that another time.
Yeah, right.
Would you like to do the Gmail and the Twitter?
Sure. Well, as I mentioned earlier, send your suggestions for our movie things to atlanticvoice@gmail.com.
We are going to be doing that, but... and I'm excited to do that because obviously you and I are both big movie buffs. I'm excited to do it. But please, we want to do a movie that people might be interested in, movies that are on TV. So think of your favorite movies. I'm only going to rule one out. That would be The Sound of Music.
No, I would not do that.
I'm not doing that because I'll end up just singing the whole way through badly.
The Twitter is at @Atlantic_voice.
That's right. Just keep things
complicated, which at the moment has mostly been just tweeting the announcements of our podcast, which is still pretty useful for people. And the website, of course, is atlanticvoice.net.
That's right. And atlanticvoice@gmail.
I said that at the start.
Oh, you did? Sorry.
Yeah.
And one last thing to all you out there. If you like this, pass it on. We're doing a big push to get our listenership up. We are in the process of negotiating with iTunes to be iTunes
sponsored.
One way
of putting it. I was going to say, I didn't want to jinx anything, but I wanted to say, hey, hopefully we'll have an announcement of another technology way you can get to our stuff if we can get there out on iTunes. I've looked on iTunes today, and there are a lot of really bad podcasts, so I think
ours would
fit right in.
Although I would imagine that those other really bad podcasts didn't have one of the podcasters constantly going after Apple products. I like my iPad and Apple products, so iTunes people, when you hear this, please, you know, we are pro iTunes, whatever.
Something like that.
I'm Zeph.
I'm Eric.
Goodbye.
Take care.
From the basement studios of the Atlantic Voice, this is the Atlantic Voice Podcast, 3,000 miles of opinion.